This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome back. We are at the top of the hour, Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. You are listening to The Pulse 107.7, streaming live on the World Wide Web, WTPLFM.com, powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And it is Thursday. We just got our beer lesson.
This is our sobering up segment.
I know.
Before
really.
We go into wine.
I'm having a little soup and some water.
Hydrate, Carol. Hydrate.
I know, right? And we're going to be joined right now with Linda Ditch of What's Cooking in Kansas. You can check her blog out, thereandbackagain.com. And welcome, Linda.
Hi, Carol. Hi, Mike. You guys are having a fun morning this morning.
Oh, we are.
Well, I guess it's afternoon now, isn't it?
Yeah. You're central time zone, right?
Right. Yeah. It just became afternoon 8 minutes ago. So, yes, I'm a little behind here.
Yeah, we sampled a really tasty craft beer out of Massachusetts, and we're going to try some wine in just a couple of moments, some nice warm red wine.
Well, you know, this is Thirsty Thursday. I wanted to point out, on my blog last fall, I did a recipe for mulled wine with apple cider, which would be nice for the fall. And it's got, you know, it's red wine and apple cider, a little brown sugar, cinnamon, cloves, some nutmeg, some orange juice, and then, of course, a quarter cup of brandy to kick it up even more. So, and it's a nice, so I thought, well, here's our nice little, you know, I'll do a little drink for you too, then keep the Thirsty Thursday theme going.
There you go.
What type of red wine would you use to make that mix?
I would use a dry red, a red Zinfandel, make sure it's red Zinfandel, or, you know, a Pinot Noir, or, you know, something a little on the dry side. A cab might be really dry, but it would work. A Cabernet would work because you are adding sugar and, you know, orange juice and some sweetness to it otherwise. So you'd want to go with a dry red. I actually, in the one I did on the blog, I used a Missouri wine that I had gotten when I went to a winery with my mom. And it was a dry blend wine that was really good, and it worked really well in this.
Good.
Hello.
I know. The three of us are...
It's the beer. It's the beer. You're in trouble. You guys are both in trouble. You know this. By the end of this hour, you're both going to be, you know, walking funny out the door. The cops are going to be waiting to see if you head for your car.
Well, here's the deal. We swish and then we spit.
Go. Okay, good.
Did you ever see the movie Sideways?
Yes.
That is such a great movie. Showing the perils of sometimes being overserved out in wine country and not always spitting, but instead swallowing every sample, you know, for 2 hours and then saying, all right, that wasn't even an Uber cab back 10 years ago when they made that movie.
Exactly. Well, see, and I kind of have that problem. I hate to spit because I want to taste, I want to swallow and get the aftertaste.
The aftertaste, yes.
You don't get that by spitting it out. So yeah, I usually been trying to just one sip and leave it be. But if it's a good wine or a good beer, it's hard to stop at one sip. It can be a little scary.
We really only had a couple sips of the beer.
That's very true.
I'm sure.
Threw some out.
I'm sure. Well, and Carol, I think I would have been a little bit like you because I understand the one you didn't really care for the flavor. I'm more of an ale person. I don't like hoppy beers. I don't like the bitterness that hops give. So I tend to go more towards ales that are, to me, smoother, a little richer flavored that way than I do with the IPA.
But, you know, it was funny because as it sat and got a little warmer, I was kind of, you know, I sipped it a little bit more and I enjoyed it a little bit better. So, which I wouldn't think that, you know, usually when I think of, I'm not a big beer drinker. Listen to me. I mean, and when I do have beer, I like it in the summer and I like it really, really cold. So, see, and that's totally opposite of what Michael says you're supposed to be.
Well, you know, and Europeans, they all drink it warm. And I think some of those beers, you know, some of the craft beers especially, are probably brewed to taste best when it's, you know, not as chilled. Or, you know, it's like wine. I mean, you know, red and white wines both are better if they're not screaming cold. You know, red, of course, room temperature is where it's usually perfect. But even white, just a little chill to them, it helps you taste the flavor and does not get bombarded with the coldness of the wine.
Right.
So tell us, is there any kind of a wine making industry in Kansas or craft beer? I don't know enough about the. Well, I know the geography, basically, so I don't know if it's friendly to growing the things that make good wines or beers.
Well, there are actually quite a few wineries in Kansas. I'm working on a piece for Topeka Magazine and going to go to a couple of local wineries. I've tried some of theirs. There's one nearby that has a wine that reminds me of the Nare I used to enjoy from Candia Vineyards there in New Hampshire. So I was happy to find it out here. And there are a lot of craft beer. I mean, you know, they grow wheat and stuff out here. So, you know, wheat, corn, yeah. But, you know, making beer is pretty common out here. So there are a couple of really great craft breweries here, especially Free State and Lawrence. And then, of course, out of Kansas City is Boulevard. It is a big craft brewer, Boulevard, which I think parallels a lot of what Sam Adams used to do back in the early days. So it's really good.
So what have you been cooking this week, Linda? Anything?
Well, I put up on the blog on Tuesday my recipes for, I'm all about apples right now. So I put up a recipe for an apple maple jam that you can make. And also, you know those pie fillings you buy in the can at the store? Well, I put up a recipe so that you can make your own pie filling and can it so you don't have to buy the ones at the store with the chemicals and everything, and it's so much better if you make it yourself. So there's recipes so you can do a little apple preserving with some jam and some pie filling that you can make and either enjoy now or you can save it to use as the winter goes along, give it away for Christmas, you know, some fun ideas for apples that way. I love the apple maple jam, and I use New Hampshire syrup to do it, too. There's a store here where I can find actual New Hampshire syrup, and so I always go there for my syrup. So, those went up on the blog. And then later today on the blog, I will be putting up an apple cider crisp ice cream recipe.
Oh, got my attention.
Yeah.
Go, tell us about that.
Well, it's inspired by the apple crisp ice cream I used to enjoy at Arnie's Place in Concord. You guys are familiar with Arnie's Place?
Yes.
Yeah, the seasonal ice cream place there on Loudoun Road.
I used to love that place.
I lived across the street from it.
And that's why you moved there, to be close to it, right?
Well, exactly. I mean, I was a happy girl when there was an apartment opening in that complex across the street. I was always over there for Inferno Burgers. I love their Inferno Burgers. Once you get past the heat, they're so good. And then the pulled pork, you know, because Tom Arnold, who runs that place, he's a champion smoker and knows how to smoke barbecue perfectly. He's a member of the Kansas City Barbecue Society. So, I mean, he knows what he's doing. And I used to get pulled pork sandwiches from there all the time. But their ice cream, you know, they make their homemade ice cream. I love that they're extreme chocolate most of the time. And it's so extreme you can only eat like a scoop at a time because it is so rich. Full of chocolate flavor. But in the fall, I always went to their apple crisp ice cream. But since I can't get apple crisp ice cream, you know, here, I thought, well, maybe I'll try making some of my own. And then as I was researching the recipe and trying to come up with what I wanted to do, I remembered I had apple cider in my fridge. And I'm like, well, I wonder if I could put apple cider in the ice cream. And I looked for apple cider ice cream recipes, and there are those out there, too. And I just kind of combined them both, and so it's a very apple flavored ice cream, and I love it. It's going to be my favorite, I think, all fall.
All right, so we're going to ask you to kind of run through it in a minute, but when you get to the end, is that when you do the crisp part, when you serve it, as opposed to mixing in the oats and the walnuts or whatever and the brown sugar that would typically make up a crisp? You do that at the end when you're serving it?
No, actually, you put it in the ice cream, but what you do is you basically make It's kind of a version of apple crisp. You make that, and then put that in the ice cream. So you basically, it's I don't make a full-out apple crisp. What I do is I dice a couple of apples and put them in a buttered cake pan or a pie pan. And then I make the crumbles topping, put on top, and I bake that until it's nice and golden brown and everything. Then I take it out of the oven and let it cool. You know, and in the meantime, you're making the ice cream base, which has to chill in the refrigerator a couple hours anyway. So, you know, you make your ice cream base, and you have to boil down some apple cider first. You start with 2 cups of apple cider, and when you're done, you've got a quarter cup. So it's this rich, syrupy apple cider flavor syrup. And then you mix that in with all the other ice cream ingredients. And then when you're making the actual ice cream, you put the ice cream base in, you know, the apple cider ice cream, you put it into the ice cream maker. And just as it's about finished, when you're about ready to take it out of the maker, you crumble in bits of that apple crisp into the ice cream. And it turns on through, and then you've got bits of apple apple crisp throughout the apple cider ice cream, and it is just amazingly good.
Yum. That sounds really good.
So you put the crunchy part in toward the end because you don't want to pulverize it by mixing it, you know, for a long period of time. Is that part of the thinking?
Right. And as it cools, because of the sugar and stuff in the crunchy part, it gets crunchier. So it'll hold up. The crunchy part holds up inside the ice cream. And, of course, then it freezes. But then you also have the bits, the nice soft bits of cooked apple in there as well. So you have bits of apple, you have the crunchy part, and then you've got the cider and there's cinnamon, and it's just, you know, it's, I can't explain it. It's just, you got to try it. It's one of those things you have to try.
Well, you're going to have to ship us some.
Oh, I wish. Yeah. Hey,
along with 2 straws. You know, I've only made homemade ice cream once, and it was fantastic. I couldn't believe how good it turned out. Just using my my KitchenAid mixer attachment, and I've moved since then. I'm not sure where it is, but it was fantastic. I just made vanilla, and it was unbelievable. So I can imagine how good what you're making must be.
Well, I make during the summertime, towards the the start of end of spring when it's starting to get hot, I put my the cylinder that you make the ice cream in, I stick it in the freezer and leave it in there all summer long.
Sure.
And I don't buy ice cream in the summer. I make it. And my favorite is mint chocolate chip. I make mint chocolate chip all summer long. So, but then I try some fun flavors and things like this one. Yeah, I saw a lot of people doing pumpkin ice cream, and I haven't tried it, and I want to try it. But that's what I thought. You know, that's what reminded me of Arnie's apple crisp ice cream. I'm like, I want that. So. Had to make it myself.
It's all things pumpkin now, much to Carol's chagrin.
I don't like that.
You don't like pumpkin? You're not a pumpkin spice girl?
No. That's the one thing I don't like about the fall, because everywhere you go, it's all pumpkin this and pumpkin that and spice this. And, you know, I'm just, that's not
pretty
me.
Much through Christmas, so sorry about that. You got 3 months of it, Carol.
I know.
Well, right, so, funny. I've noticed that people are doing all these pumpkin things right now, and it's almost like they forgot apples. I'm like, you know, apple season is actually comes before pumpkin season. Pumpkin should be more October-ish to November-ish. You know, apples are ready right now. You know, I mean, I know pumpkins are too, but pumpkins will keep. Get the apples while they're perfect. Also, you know, with all those groves around there that you can go apple picking, you can get them right off the tree, and then you can do so many delicious, wonderful things with them. And so it's almost like they skip over apples anymore and go straight to pumpkin.
Well, it gives me a chance to let everybody know that tomorrow we'll be talking to the owners of Max Apples of Londonderry. Andy and Carol Mack will be joining us for a short segment on phone, just all about what you're saying now. Let's not forget the apples. There's so much versatility and so many great varieties here in New Hampshire. So that's happening tomorrow at 1:30. Let's get your contact information so people can read all about what you told us about today.
Well, you can find my blog at it's There and Back Again Food at www.thereandbackagainfood.com, or you can also find the blog on Facebook under There and Back Again Food, or you can follow me on Twitter at Linda A. Ditch.
Beautiful. Well, Linda, thank you so much.
Oh, I always have fun coming to visit with you guys. I like listening ahead of time to see what you're talking about. You guys always make me laugh. about something.
Oh, good. Well, it's a pleasure to have you every week, and enjoy your weekend. Plenty of football. Your Chiefs are on TV tonight.
Yeah, I'm wearing my red tonight, and I'll be wearing Patriots blue on Sunday. So
that a girl.
I'll be all set.
All right.
She's so funny.
See you next week.
All right.
Okay,
bye, Linda.
You.
See you.
Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to go on a short break. And when we come back, we will be joined with my dad, George Lawrence, as well as Craig Pierce. He is Fine Wines Portfolio Manager of Martinetti. And we're going to taste some wine. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. It is Thursday, and we've been sipping some beer. Now we're going to sip some wine. So I'd like to introduce Craig Pierce, Fine Wines Portfolio Manager. That's quite the title there, Craig, of Martinetti. Welcome to Food for Thought, and welcome, Dad, also, George
yes,
Lawrence.
How are you?
Very glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes.
Well, we're having you because you bring us things to drink that we like.
Well, my wife says that I'm handsome, but I'm positively fetching with a bottle of wine in my hand.
What happens when you bring in two bottles of wine? Can you talk about that?
Oh, it's full-on gymnastics.
Oh. I didn't expect that from this guy.
He got you.
Yeah, he did indeed. Tonight, going out at Manchester Country Club, which, by the way, they put millions of dollars into renovations if you haven't been there yet. And a beautiful time to be there, watching people tee off here into the sunset. At Manchester Country Club tonight, it's Cabernet and Merlot from around the world. And those are a couple of my favorite reds. And today, Craig has brought in a couple of bottles that he's uncorked for us. And we're going to do a little tasting and talk about it. All right. So there's a fundraising component to this thing tonight, right, Craig?
Yes, absolutely. The State Liquor Commission has taken the lead with the success of other large events here in the state that they shepherd and support. They've discovered that smaller, more focused tastings are really successful for them. And the first one that they did was Celebration of Tuscany, and they raised a little over $14,000with 120-odd attendees.
Wow.
For a local charity. So they said, wow, this is a win-win-win, so we need to make this a series. So the Tuscan one was sort of a one-off. You know, being smart and being aggressive, they went, geez, you know, we should do something about this. So they're starting a series. So this will be the first official one of the series. And it's just a great opportunity. I mean, tonight, there are a few tickets left. They will be able to get them at the door. As far as we know, there's about 30 tickets left. It's capped at 150, which is the beauty of it. So there's 14 tables of wine. There's going to be a max of 150 people in the room.
So it won't be packed.
It won't be packed. And here's the great kicker. $65 a ticket, proceeds partially going to charity. And there's nothing in the room that's under $45 a bottle retail. So for $65, you get 14 tables of wine that the least expensive in the room is $45. So these are perfect events for... I think this is a perfect event for someone that has a little bit of wine knowledge but is still kind of intimidated by the subject. And it's a chance to taste some of the finest wines in the world for very little money.
So you're saying that I could taste the difference if I had a discerning enough palate between a $15 bottle of wine, which is kind of the sweet spot as I understand it, and a bottle of wine that's going to be more than that. Am I going to appreciably realize the upgrade there, do you think?
Well, you should. I mean, that's a multi-layered answer to that question.
Yeah.
But, you know, contrary to where we're probably going to go with the subject, I will say at the outset that, you know, you're the world's leading expert on your palate. So it's not for me to tell you that the $260 bottle of Opus 1 is something you're going to enjoy a lot better than this Earthquake Cabernet I have here. Do I think you're going to? More than likely, yes. But if you don't, you don't. That being said, an event like tonight is a perfect chance
to see.
For you to come in and taste a $260 bottle of wine that you get $65 into the night, and then taste all the other ones around it. So that's why I'm a champion of these things, because it really opens people's eyes. You know, I get this question all the time when I and working with consumer events. You know, what's the difference between a $10 bottle and a $100 bottle? Well, it's sort of like saying, you know, there's a definite difference, and there's a reason why. It's sort of like saying a Hyundai and a Mercedes are the same thing because they're both cars. Yeah. You know, there's a reason why a Mercedes costs six times what a Hyundai does. It's safer. It's going to last longer. Not that Hyundais aren't safe and not that they don't last long, but the Mercedes is going to be there 25 years from now, and there's a reason why it costs so much more. It's the same thing with wine. In general, there's exceptions to all of it, but in general, time is money. So it takes 2 to 3 years to make some of the world's finest wines. 90% of the wines in the marketplace are meant to be consumed within a year of hitting the shelf. But they're in a certain price category. Those super premium wines that we're talking about, that's just a small amount of production worldwide. But, you know, we already have 2015 white wines from the Southern Hemisphere because they harvest in April. So we have wines from this calendar year in the marketplace today here in New Hampshire, in little old New Hampshire, that were made this year. And they came halfway around the world to get here. So you put that up against an Italian wine that took 3 years to make and the producer kept in the bottle in his or her cellar for three more years before even sending it to the market. The cost between those two items in production and logistics is vastly different. And the product is too.
So what you brought today, these are California wines or?
Well, it's Cabernet and Merlot from around the world. So
right.
I brought several wines today, but we narrowed it down. I brought it an Australian Cabernet, mm-hmm. and we're going to taste it against an American Cabernet. So
cool.
We're comparing apples to apples, and we can see the differences. And
so which one is this one?
So the first is from a hallowed producer, Penfolds, one of Australia's oldest wineries. In 120-something years of winemaking, they're on their fifth winemaker. So old school, long program.
I remember somebody gave us a bottle of Penfolds, and we loved it. And since then, we have made many purchases. So it was our sampling. And once you, as Craig points out, once you try something, you might realize, yeah, there's a reason why I'm paying a little bit more, because it's better wine.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what is the average cost of this wine?
So you're in the 30s at this point. Neither of these wines will be at the event tonight because they didn't make the cut as far as price is concerned.
Interesting.
But I thought these are more approachable price-wise, and they're in most of the major liquor stores, state liquor stores in this area. So I thought they'd be good ones to showcase. But this is the Bin 9 from Penfolds. I was fortunate enough to go to a tasting. My company does a lot of business with Penfolds throughout New England, and I was down in Braintree last year, and Peter Gago, who's the current winemaker at Penfolds, he's still the new guy at 21 years or whatever. They're doing Penfolds every other year, goes to a major city in the world and does a recorking event, and they just say, bring us your old Penfolds, we'll check the wines, we'll recork them for you. And certify the wine for you. And he said it's unbelievable what shows up at these events.
Never
so
heard of
they'll
that.
Do Tokyo. And he says there'll be a line around the block with people.
Wait. They bring I know. Say that again.
So if you've got a winery that's been around for 150 years and it's a label like Penfolds that worldwide has a status and a stature, people all over the world have been buying cases of this stuff and putting it away.
Okay.
So somebody, you know, somebody passes on and they leave their wine cellar to their son, and now it becomes a family heirloom. It becomes a heritage thing. And Peter says, we have wines from the early 1900s and the late 1800s showing up. And he goes, some of them we look
That's so cool.
Yeah, and he goes, some of them we look at them and we just go, we're not going to recork this. We're not going to touch this bottle.
We'll leave it alone.
It's actually a museum piece. There's no way the wine that's in there is still going to be good anyway, so we want to leave the package intact. And he says he's the new guy still at 21 years as the winemaker, and he said we have wines show up that we don't even have a record that we made them.
Wow.
But there's things about the bottle that we know from that time period that it's our wine. He goes, but we lost record that we even made it. It's something
that is really cool.
So that's one of the things I love about the business I'm in is the history of it. you know, the history of wine worldwide.
And I'll bet the characters are pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, the stories, I'm sure there have been books written and movies made. I mean, this isn't exactly the same, but I love Sideways. I'm sure you've seen that. That was it Merlot? Was that the
Merlot's back,
the
by the way?
Yeah.
Don't shy away from the Merlot's tonight.
No. I don't blame you. But what a funny movie that was. And I think it brought wine to the forefront more than it had been in the past, because it became, from an art movie, a mainstream movie, and did very well.
And here's the thing. You know, it's at the end of the day, it's an agricultural product, and it's grape juice. And it sounds funny to have a guy like me saying that, but the truth is that's what it is. And I think what Sideways did for wine, certainly what it did for Pinot Noir, and what it didn't do for Merlot, but I think what it did for wine is it put a subject that people are intimidated by in a funny context.
Why do you think that is, that people are intimidated by wine?
You know, I'm going to say this, and I feel like a heretic every time I say it, even though I don't sell their wines anymore. You know, the leaders in California at the time that really brought American wine to where it is today, like Robert Mondavi, for instance, who's a great man, they made the conscious decision early on to make it a snob product. And you know what? It worked really, really well.
So you're saying they marketed it that way?
It was a status.
Branded it that way?
It was a status item for them. And that's how they positioned it, and that's how they marketed it. And it worked.
So
it worked really well.
In the days of Blue Nun and, you know, all those kinds of brands.
And so, for want of a better term, the hangover we have still today is that people are intimidated by the subject. And, again, it's grape juice. It's a lot more fun than grape juice, but it's grape juice. So I think that, at the time, was the right thing. It worked incredibly well, but we're just now breaking through into wine is food and not sin. Starbucks is testing. They've got a test kite up doing a wine bar.
Probably in the Seattle area.
I think so. I just saw it come across on a trade email the other day.
Wow.
One of our suppliers actually sent it to me, and I didn't read through it. But, you know, Starbucks is selling wine.
Well, that part of the country is huge in wine production, so you kind of wonder if they're going to use the local providers or if they're going to go with, you know, more exotic versions.
I don't know which way they'll go with it.
Knowing Starbucks, it'll be exotic.
Yeah.
Maybe the lower echelon of it, but it'll be there,
yeah,
I would say.
Georgie, do you like wine, or do you...
I like that wine.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's very good.
Yeah,
it's good. It's,
it's very good.
Just enough dryness.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a nice dry wine. Yeah,
it's
and I would think you could pair this with any number of things, because nothing gets in the way from what I'm tasting here.
Right. That's the other thing about expensive wine is a simply made wine is meant to be drunk for refreshment and
enough.
I know.
Gonna cut you off.
I know. That's the problem, is I've only had one sip.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think you did.
I just almost knocked my glass over. That would have been fantastic. Pairing wine with food is a magical thing. I mean, the nirvana moment of wine and food together is where the food by itself is really good, the wine by itself is really good, but when you have both together, somehow they make each other better. And if you've ever experienced that, you don't forget it, and you want more. So a simply made wine that's just meant to be refreshing and something you have, you know, when you get home from work just to quench your thirst while you start dinner or whatever, those wines, they're great for what they are as a cocktail, but they might not hold up with a lot of foods because they're simply made and they're not particularly complex. These wines are going to hold up with a lot of different foods, and they're going to pair really well. This is going to be great with a piece of lightly seasoned red meat or heavily seasoned fish or fowl. Believe it or not, you say Cabernet and you go, what's Craig talking about fish? But think about the different fishes, you know. This with a piece of smoked bluefish.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Yum.
Swordfish.
Or yeah. Carol would love it with roasted pumpkin.
You were listening.
All right, time to take a break.
Yeah,
because I think we're going to try some of the earthquake in just a moment.
All right.
It's Food for Thought. Our guest is Craig Pierce, Fine Wines Portfolio Manager from Martin Yeti, here for a big event tonight at Manchester Country Club. A few tickets still available. Cabernet and Merlot from around the world. We are going from South America to North America with our next tasting next on The Pulse, WTPL.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Hi there, it's 1:45. Carol Lawrence and Mike Morin and George Lawrence and Craig Pierce around the big table of discussion here today, and it's all about wine. Food for Thought is brought to you by Casey's Rib Shack, famous hickory-smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue there on 2nd Street in Manchester. And we're also brought to you by Fallon's Furniture, the official decorator of the Green Room, Food for Thought, and Kale & Company. Kale & Company with Ken Kale, and his guests will be in here in just a few moments. And we're in studio another few moments. The portfolio, the Fine Wines portfolio manager of Martin Yeti, is Craig Pierce, a new position for him after spending many years at all levels of wine and things. Cabernet and Merlot from around the world is a fundraiser tonight at Manchester Country Club, benefiting Concord Hospital's Payson Cancer Center. And you know, one thing we didn't find out, Craig, we know there's a handful of tickets left. Most have been sold already. What time does the event begin?
It's 6 to 8 tonight, Manchester Country Club. And you can go on liquorandwineoutlets.com and get tickets now. But we
to
expect,
be safe, huh?
Yeah, there was a, as of late last night, there was about 30 tickets left. Again, it's capped at 150, so we fully expect all of those to go, and there may be a few left at the door at this point.
So I've been to many events, not quite like this one, but wine events in general. And generally, the Liquor Commission gives you a little incentive. If you find something you like, buy a six or better, you get 15% off. Is that with all the brands tonight?
At the event, and they're also including a new phone app where you can order right there from your smartphone and have you can choose which favorite New Hampshire State Liquor Store you want.
Oh.
Your wine's delivered to
you. You got a couple new ones. One on Elm Street, the one in Bedford, right at the Copper Door is new, and I'm trying to think there's probably another one.
The one right next door to the Red Arrow Diner.
Oh, that's right, yes.
And the giant new one in Salem, which opened a couple months ago.
Yes, I've been there as well.
It's massive.
Hmm.
So next they'll be delivering it at the exits on the highways.
don't laugh.
Yeah,
I've been pushing for that for years. My daughter's in private school, so
yeah. I think Amazon is working on something for wine delivery in a few select markets. I mean, they're trying to deliver everything basically. Walgreens can be delivering meds within an hour, so I guess that's where we're going. Please, no drones though.
Right.
This is expensive stuff, or it's tasty stuff. Don't want to lose it. All right, so we had a Penfold cab here just a moment ago from 2012 South Australia. We all agreed that we enjoyed the dryness of it, and felt that, as Craig pointed out, it would serve nicely as a pairing for any number of different foods, be it seafood or red meat, which is the more traditional way of thinking. But you got to go out of the box sometimes, Craig, with some of these things. There really aren't any rules except whatever rule you want to make for yourself.
Right. I mean, people now are, when it comes to wine, folks are very varietal loyal.
Yep.
And so they're going to drink.
Explain a varietal, because folks.
So varietal is the type of grape. Yeah. So in Europe, or Old World, in Europe, wines are traditionally named over where they're from, by where they're from. So if it's from Bordeaux, you're supposed to know that that's more than likely a Cabernet Merlot blend if it's red. If it's from Burgundy in France and it's white, you're supposed to know that's always going to be a Chardonnay, because they name it after the place. And the place, and think about it, you know, 800 years they've been making Pinot Noir and Burgundy. Everybody should know that that's what's coming out of Burgundy, right? Well, we don't have that here, so we name it after the grape. So that's the difference.
Oh,
and
that's interesting.
And we're seeing a huge turn. I left hospitality and went into this side of the business 10 years ago. And just in that time, there's a huge acceptance of the old school European producers to putting the varietal on the label, because our market's so important. So that's good for the consumer. That's good for all of us, I think.
Is there a better job in the world than being a fine wines portfolio manager? Now, let's be honest about this.
I'm sure there is. I just don't know of it.
I think it's a pretty fancy title.
I do, too. But it's great. George?
Like beers, the alcohol content vary?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You're about to experience that because we're coming off what's probably a 14% alcohol Australian. And I believe the label says, the label on this says 15.
No kidding. Wow. I always thought there was 6, 7, and 8.
It's not Thunderbird, here. George.
Well, you mean that Penfolds was 14% alcohol?
Yeah.
And are my cheeks red?
Okay,
no,
so
you're blushing. Well, no, you're not.
So the Penfolds is 14. The Earthquake State's 15. And I will tell you, it's not called Earthquake for no reason. I will tell you that if the law in the United States is whatever product, wherever it comes from, the label for the wine sold in the U.S., if it says 14% or less, they're allowed, or 13.9% or less, they're allowed to be off by 1.5%. That's the swing. If it says 14 or more, they're allowed to be off by 1. Conceivably, that Earthquake is 16%.
That's so high, isn't
that's
it?
High.
Yeah. Yeah.
What it is, because by volume. Was, what, 11?
Well, an IPA is going to be 11 or 12%.
Right.
That's a serious IPA, though.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're usually around 10 or so. Okay, cool.
I like this one better.
Yeah.
This one's,
there's a difference.
It seems lighter. Not so...
more approachable, maybe?
Yeah.
Softer.
Softer.
And rounder.
There you go.
And plusher, maybe? So this is... This is...
I like it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, wait. Don't wait. I'll get you more. You don't have to...
I'm just kidding.
Very good.
So this wine comes from our friends at Michael David down in the Phillips Brothers down in Lodi. Lodi is very, very warm. So when you grow grapes in warm weather, you get a ton of sugar. When you get a ton of sugar, you get a ton of alcohol. So... That's where the alcohol is coming from in this, and that's on purpose.
And how long does this take to make? To be ready for sale.
Well, this is 2012, so this is current vintage, and they're harvesting the 15 now. So this has probably been in the marketplace since the first quarter of the year. So two and a half years.
They make it, barrel it, and it goes right out.
Well, no, they make it. No,
they hold it.
Two and a half years.
Yeah, okay. Two and a half years. The whole process. Okay. Before it's in the pipeline.
All right, so California, extremely dry year. I thought I heard that's playing to the advantage of the crop. Perhaps there'll be fewer grapes, but a better quality. Is that what you're hearing? Or tell me what the real deal is.
If you own vineyards that you do minimal watering and you have mature vines, this kind of weather is good news because those vines know how to survive and they actually benefit from it. A grapevine in a vineyard that's watered mechanically on a regular basis probably sends roots down 9-10 feet because it doesn't have to. It doesn't have to work. You tend not to get complicated grapes from a vine like that. A vine that's not watered or is only watered at crucial times of the year will have 25 to 30 foot deep vines. So when a drought hits... The guys that farm the hard way kind of chuckle to themselves because that 35-foot vine after this year's over is going to be a 40-foot vine because the vine knows it's got to go down to get the water, and it's strong enough to do it and withstand it. Those vines tend to produce much more complex fruit, and you get better wine.
Can you walk into a vineyard, pull off a grape, and tell if it's going to make good wine?
The right person can.
Okay.
But there's a lot of steps between that vine for someone to muck up and make a mistake. It's fun. I just got back from Oregon, a wine trip in Oregon in mid-August, and crush had not quite begun yet. And I took something that I was taught on a wine trip to South America a few years ago. We went into the tasting room, and I said, this vineyard block, which wine do you make from it? And they told us, and so we got a sample of that wine, and then we went right out into the vineyard, and the grapes were probably 3 or 4 days from harvest, and we tasted the wine, and then we tasted the grapes from that vineyard, and then we tasted the wine, and you see the thumbprint when you do that. Now, not very many people get to do that because of timing and all those kinds of things, but yeah, it's there. It's the image of what that's going to be is there on the vine.
cool.
Already?
Well, yeah, Carol's getting into it here with her. That was a little heavier pour for you from Craig here. Let's we're ready to hit news. Craig Pierce, Fine Wines Portfolio Manager, Martin Yeti. Tonight, Manchester Country Club, Cabernet and Merlot from around the world starts at 6 o'clock, benefiting Concord Hospital's Payson Cancer Center. Just a few tickets left. Get in touch with the Liquor Commission. They're the ones that are dispensing the tickets, correct?
Yes.
All right. Craig, thank you. Please come back. What are you doing tomorrow?
No, we'll have to have him back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, wine is an intimidating subject. And I think the more they hear about it.
It is.
You know.
Yeah.
But he simplified it and make it something
definitely.
That nobody felt threatened by.
No, definitely
and come, if you come to the event, come see me tonight and I'll steer you to a couple other tables.
Cool.
There you go.
And we'll chat it up.
All right.
Thanks, Craig.